Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Great Divide Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Alan Jacoby. With me today, somebody very special, who I'll call an American patriot. Her nephew was 100% a great American patriot. Jerry Perna, the aunt of the late Matthew Perna, who was one of the January 6th, because he's not the only January 6th protester, who unfortunately was driven, I'd like to say, by Biden's DOJ into taking his own life, which is horrible. Jerry, thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on, Alan.
You know, I think it's at this point, even though, I mean, what are we? January 6th was over 2 years ago now. And we know how that was blown out of proportion and the things that have happened and the people that have been persecuted. And I think it's more important now than ever because of all these people getting pressured into guilty pleas and being, you know, wrongfully convicted. I'll come out and say that, and sentenced to ridiculous amounts of time in prison where the time does not fit the crime. It's important now to keep that messaging going because of the families it's affected, of people going to jail, the families it's affected because people are no longer with us, which is tragic. But, you know, people just, we can't have people forget about like the people, like your nephew, Matthew Perna. And I'd like to get, I guess, first, the background of Matthew, you know, where he's from. I know he's from Pennsylvania, and, you know, just, I guess we'll go into the events leading up to his, you know, persecution and so on. And, you know, the foundation and everything else. So, where do you want to start? Well, maybe the background about Matthew?
Yeah, I can start with the background. Matthew, you know, was raised in a small town in Pennsylvania. And he had a very, very all-American growing up, you know, played sports, played an instrument in high school. He was very, very, very smart. He graduated toward the top of his class from high school. He went on to Penn State University, where, again, he graduated toward the top of his class. And he majored in marketing and business. And after he graduated college, he took a regular 9-to-5 job. And it was, after about 2 years, it was clear that Matt wanted to do something else. Matt was a free spirit. He loved to travel. He loved experiencing cultures from all over the world. He loved talking to people, especially elderly people. Matt, you know, even as a younger person, most young kids, they don't want to have anything to do with their grandparents. But Matt gravitated toward his. And even, you know, up until his death, he enjoyed going to a coffee shop and striking up a conversation with an older person because he just felt he had so much to learn from their experience. And so Matt had decided after much thought that he would get his certification to teach English in a foreign country. And that's what he did. He went to Thailand, and he was in Thailand for a year. And he taught English to middle school children, wow, elementary school. And he absolutely loved it. And he returned from Thailand, and he decided to explore another country. So he went to South Korea. And when Matt was abroad, he didn't just stick with the country he was in. He had some time off or a weekend, a long weekend. He traveled. He went to Vietnam. He went to Poland. He went to Italy. He went as many places as he could go. Hmm. And he loved what he did. And so he was in South Korea, and he was going on 2 years, and he was going to renew his contract when his mom was diagnosed with leukemia. And it was very serious. And I texted him and I said, Matt, I think you need to come home. And he immediately wrapped up things in South Korea, headed back home, and he just jumped into helping his mom with as many holistic remedies that he could come up with, even if it was just to make her not nauseous after her medical treatments. He read constantly. Matt had a library of books in his home, and he was never without a book in his hand. So if there was a subject he was unfamiliar with, he got familiar with it. He was my go-to person. Every time, if there was something going on in politics or in America that, or even world history, and it just, you know, I wasn't quite understanding what was going on, I could call Matt. And if he didn't know the answer in the morning, he knew it by the afternoon. And he would tell me, he would explain it to me. And I appreciated it so much because I learned so much from my nephew. I did. And he was there for his mom. And due to a hospital error, if you call it, after his mom was almost out of the woods after a bone marrow transplant, she was giving blood. She was given blood that had bacteria in it.
Oh, no.
And she died 12 hours later.
Oh.
And we were blindsided by this. I mean, Matt's mom was part of our family for over 40 years. She was the sister I always wanted. I never had a sister growing up. And I was just a basket case. But even more so, my brother just lost his wife. You know, they were actually planning to go abroad and meet the bone marrow transplant donor. And I mean, because she was that far out of the woods.
Wow.
So this was devastating. This was devastating to Matt and his brother and his dad. And Matt's brother lives in another part of the country. And Matt felt that he needed to stay in Pennsylvania and be there for his dad and somehow make a living there. It's a steel town, you know. Yeah. The steel mills all moved to Mexico and there's not a lot going on there. But Matt was determined to stay there and be there for his dad. And he started getting involved in alkaline water filtration systems through Kangen and CBD products. Essential oils. Matt was never big on pharmaceutical companies. And after right. his mom, you yeah. know, died to one of the errors at the hospital, it made him even more against big pharma. Matt didn't even have health insurance. And it wasn't that he couldn't afford it. He just knew he wasn't going to use it.
Yeah. He's not into big pharma. And if he could do anything with, you know,
not at all.
Natural medicine, the holistics. You know, it's funny. You said that as being a young man, that Matthew was drawn to older people. And mm-hmm. that was me as a little boy growing up where, you know, my mother would take me to McDonald's on a Sunday morning. And I would look around or any restaurant, but specifically Sundays. And I remember this being really young. I would seek out the oldest person I could. And if they were alone, I would bring my tray over. And my mom was like, oh, you're going to bother these old people and go and sit with them. And it's funny. This was actually my first lesson at a very young age of what it means when nobody's with us anymore, because it was this, and I still remember his face. And I'm going back. I was probably 5 or 6. I'm 43 now. And this old man, Max, he had a very distinctive hat, big mustache, glasses, wore a coat. It was, and he would be there every Sunday morning. And we would go and we'd see him and got to be friendly with him. My mom would go and sit in the booth and I would go eat with Max. And this would go on for months, every Sunday. And then one Sunday we went there and Max wasn't there. And then we went the week after and he wasn't there again. And he never came back. And my mom had to explain to me about losing people and that Max probably passed away and just didn't come to Sunday breakfast anymore. But I always wanted to talk to older people, even as, you know, an adolescent, 12, 13, 14, I'd always gravitate around the older people and I would mm-hmm. speak. You never know what you could learn, but it was always funny that said that when you said that stuck with me and brought back a whole bunch of memories that I would always gravitate towards older people. So I know exactly how he was as far as that respect.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, he's doing everything he can as a great son to be there for his father after the loss mm-hmm. of his mother. And now obviously comes the time where, you know, Donald Trump was either president at the time or was running for president. And I guess there was a part of him that became politically charged. It's not in everybody. It was obviously in Matthew. So what got him? I mean, was he heavily politically charged and like seeing what's going on? Like what led to him to say, hey, you know, the election's over. Obviously, he was one of the people that thought that really, truly believed there was issues with the election and he wanted to go and exercise his First Amendment right and protest about it. So bring us to there.
Well, Matt really wasn't into politics. He never trusted politicians. He said they were all on the take, every one of them. And he was actually a Bernie supporter way back when. And I used to get into arguments with him, like, come on, Matt, come on.
He was a Bernie bro.
He was a Bernie bro. We would get into these back and forths. And then Donald Trump came on the scene. And like I said, Matt read his books, Matt read about him, and he dove into learning what he was all about. And I think it was one of those first debates that Donald Trump had with Hillary Clinton. And that was like priceless to Matt. That was unreal to see a debate play out the way that one did. And he became a Trump supporter at that point. And I mean, he had gone to a couple of rallies. He wasn't a constant, you know, MAGA hat wearing person. He went to the rallies. He did support President Trump, and he was very happy when he was elected into office. And Matt made it known many times that he had his best years financially while President Trump was in office. And Matt was a go-getter. I mean, he was good at what he did, but at the same time, as good of a salesman as Matt was, Matt had a heart for people. And he recognized when somebody could not afford a alkaline water filtration system at $4,000 or $5,000, Matt actually bought BPA-free containers, like dozens of them.
Right.
And if he felt that someone who couldn't afford the machine could still benefit from the water, especially if they were going through chemotherapy treatments, Matt took water to these people faithfully. Every 2 days, he would deliver alkaline-free water to them at no charge.
Wow.
He did this with, I can't even tell you how many people, because after he died, people told me he used to bring me water. Oh, he brought me water. And I'm like, it was crazy. But at the same time, he believed in the products that he sold. He used them regularly. And he made a very good living doing it. And so when the next election was coming around, you know, everybody just knew Donald Trump was going to get elected again. And the election came, and the results were ridiculous. And Matt said, this isn't going to fly. So they had the Stop the Steal rally, and Matt wanted to go. And he felt he was going to be part of a historic celebration. He did not think that Mike Pence was going to certify the election. He thought that the truth was going to come out that day, and this is why everybody was invited to D.C., and he wanted to be part of it. He didn't go there with any expectation of there being any rioting or anything of that nature. Matt just wasn't like that. He was a peaceful person. And so he went and, you know, attended the speech, was making his way to the Capitol, and he said there were people on each side of the street with big megaphones, and they were saying that Mike Pence was a traitor. Mike Pence certified the election. And he noticed that the crowd was getting riled up on the way there.
Yeah.
And as he got closer to the Capitol, he said that the crowd was just elbow to elbow. You couldn't move in either direction, and it was like a bottleneck. They were all being funneled to the entrances. And Matt was in the crowd. Matt was holding his cell phone up, and he was live streaming on Facebook. He didn't have a weapon on him or anything like that. Just, you know, he went armed with a cell phone. So they get to this door, and somebody was poking him from behind with a flagpole. And in hindsight, I think about that now because I've been hearing reports that other J6ers were saying they were being poked and prodded from behind.
I've heard that a few times too.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be a Patriot doing that. And so Matt grabbed the flagpole and he threw it on the ground. And the door was open and the Capitol Police were standing inside. And Matt was pushed from behind. He said, somebody just kept pushing me and pushing me. And I went through the door. And there was an older gentleman in front of Matt that fell. And Matt was seen on camera helping the man to his feet before he got trampled. And then the police officers kind of stepped aside. And Matt walked in again with his cell phone in hand. And he stayed within the velvet ropes, much like a tourist. And he live streamed. He was in there for less than 15 minutes, and he went to go out the door that he walked into, but there were police barricading it, so he turned around and he went out the back door and went back to his hotel room, and he and a few of his friends did a Facebook video, and they talked about what they had seen that day.
Yeah,
and that video is actually available to watch on my website at rememberingmattperna.com. The interesting thing about that video is they used that video and took words out of context and used it against him in his case.
They're good at that.
But if you watch any video on my website, that's the video you want to watch, because you will see Matt and his friends and their demeanor. They are not riled up and hyped up like their team just won the Super Bowl or something. They're very calm and cool. And there gets a point toward the end of the video where Matt states, well, Mike Pence proved himself to be a traitor. But don't worry. Don't worry. This isn't over yet.
Right.
And later I find out that the DOJ took Mike Pence as a traitor. This isn't over yet. That's all they took from that entire 7-minute video.
Listen, like anything else, we know the deceptive editing that one the mainstream media will do. I mean, look what they've done to Trump's speeches. Look what they've done to so many people. Look what they've even done to Ron DeSantis in the past. And they will take parts of it and say, well, look what he said. Oh, there's good people on both sides, and they won't play the whole thing. And they'll do that. And of course, the weaponized DOJ is going to do that at any chance they get in this situation.
Right.
And it's a shame. So he goes back to his hotel. When was Matthew arrested? How did that, like, what was that day like?
Well, the following week, I was in Florida, and, you know, where I live, and somebody posted on Facebook that the FBI had a website up where people who attended January 6th were being looked for.
Okay.
And I went to the link, and I started scrolling through the pictures. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and lo and behold, Matt's picture is on the FBI website.
Was his name up there too, or just his picture they were trying to identify?
Just his picture.
Just his picture.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, they knew his name because he was live streaming. They knew his name.
Sure.
And but they had his picture up there, and my heart just sunk. I mean, I was worried. I was very worried, very concerned. And I phoned one of my brothers that night. And I said, Matt's picture's on the FBI website. I said, you've got to get to his house as soon as you can. So by 6 o'clock in the morning, my one brother went over to Matt's house, and Matt had already known. Somebody else had seen it. And by 9 o'clock, Matt had called the FBI in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. And he told them that his picture was on the website. And he thought, much like we did, that this was all a huge misunderstanding.
Sure.
Matt didn't break anything. Matt didn't tear down any barriers. Matt didn't break through a door. He didn't hurt anyone. This must be a big mistake. And Matt felt the same way. And so he called them, and they came out to his house to interview him. And Matt told him everything. And the two officers that came were very polite, very professional. And they said, well, if we have any more questions, we'll be in touch. So he calls me after this took place, and I said, I have a bad feeling about this. I'm getting a plane ticket. I'm coming home. I said, we need to get you an attorney. And Matt, even at that point, he said, Angie, it's okay. They made it seem like it was not a big deal. And I said, no, there's something going on here, and I'm coming home. So I did.
Isn't it amazing where, all right, the distrust of politicians and government, but something like this, he sees his photo, and I mean, I would have had different advice for him, but I get it, because this is like the true American way of thinking, that my government is not going to persecute me. They're going to be understanding because I did not do anything wrong, and I'm going to be able to tell them the truth. I don't need an attorney. I'm dealing with the FBI. These are the good guys. I'm going to tell them everything that happened, just like you laid out, because no laws were broken.
Right.
And it's one of those things. And I have so many family in law enforcement, and they've told me forever, you get handcuffs put on you, you don't say anything. You want the police to question you about any matter, no matter who they are, you don't say anything. But in the heat of the moment, when this is going on and adrenaline is going, I get it. He thought, you know what? This is quick. My name's going to be cleared, and I'm going to go on with my life because I did nothing wrong.
Right.
And now you look, because I have such a disdain for the FBI, the leadership. I mean, I have friends that are FBI agents, but I speak to them, and they don't disagree with me, Jerry, about the weaponization of the organizations, you know, and we're talking about American citizens that are not armed and going in and trying to overthrow the government. Nobody was trying to overthrow the government that day. We saw the Capitol Police allowing people in. There was video of the Capitol Police handing visitor stickers to people, having them bypass the metal detectors. I mean, people being funneled in. Not the first time I've heard people being poked from behind with flagpoles and things. Like, why is this happening? Like, hey, get in there. Like, they're cattle.
Okay? Yes.
I mean, that's what was happening. We know that. I mean, literally within the last 24 hours, there's reports coming out that the Capitol Police and the FBI both knew that there was a credible threat, and they didn't share it with anybody. We know that there's video out there that nobody's seen, that they don't want us to see, that hopefully we do see after Tucker Carlson had access to it. But so Matthew thinks, hey, Aunt Jerry, everything's fine. Everything's good, right?
Yes.
And then what?
So I came home, and we took the advice of a friend, and we contacted an attorney who had 42 years of criminal justice experience. And we pulled up to his office to talk to him, and I noticed a Biden sign in front of his office. And then I said to Matt, I said, Matt, I don't like the looks of this. Nope. And he said, well, we got to give him a chance, Aunt Jerry. I want to hear what he has to say. Again, Matt had no discriminating tendencies whatsoever. He didn't look at people's color. He didn't care what political party they were, what religion they practiced. He was open to everybody. He just, that's the type of person he was. So we went in, and yes, the attorney was a Biden supporter, but he said, this is a piece of cake. This is a slap on the wrist. This is no big deal. Don't worry. I've got this. So we retained him because Matt liked him. And about a week later, that's when they slapped 240 of the J6ers with the felony charge of obstruction of an official proceeding. And that's when the nightmare began.
He was one of those people that got slapped with it.
Yes, he was. And honestly, after everything I've learned, Alan, I truly believe he was mistakenly charged because they couldn't find anything on him. He had never had a parking ticket prior to this. They couldn't find one piece of evidence to suggest that he was part of any terrorist group or militia group, nothing. And they knew it. But they were not willing to budge on dropping that felony charge. And of course, It made the local news up there daily. They constantly dragged him through the mud. It was absolutely the most humiliating experience for him and my family. But not once did our family ever blame Matt, because we knew Matt. We knew him. And we knew he didn't deserve any of this treatment. He didn't deserve this persecution. The newspaper had him already being convicted and sentenced to 20 years in jail for what he did. I mean, it was unreal. They said he broke into the Capitol. They printed more lies about him than I can count.
Of course. Of course.
And the local community up there, they were brutal. Friends of our family, friends of me, had just decided they didn't want anything to do with us anymore.
Well, then they weren't friends, and to hell with them. I mean,
I know, but it was difficult, though. These are people that knew me from kindergarten. Kindergarten.
Wow.
And Matt felt horrible, because I remember the one day the story had gone into the newspaper and it was on all the local news stations, and my phone started blowing up, and it was my classmates. I'm going to be 58 years old. You realize how long these people have been in my life.
Right.
And it was my classmates. And they were telling me that they thought they knew me, but apparently they didn't. I'm a white supremacist. I'm a racist. They don't want me a part of their class anymore that I graduated with. I mean, it was horrible. And I'm sitting there and I'm just bawling. And Matt starts crying. Oh, man. And he starts apologizing to me. "Aunt Jerry, I'm so sorry. This is all my fault." Like, "Don't you apologize. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything wrong." And, but it was things like that that led to him declining mentally, because he felt like he was the cause of all this grief for everybody and this embarrassment. And it wasn't an embarrassment. It wasn't, not at all.
You know you're dealing with such a good-hearted person when they're beating themselves up and tearing themselves apart because they're not worried. He's not worried really about what's happening to him. He's worried about the people that are close to him and around him.
Exactly.
What's happening to them, of you, people just turning your back. And, you know, they say you really want to – you have to endure a real crisis in your life to really – determine and see who your real friends are.
Oh, absolutely.
And until that it happened to me years and years ago, and it really, really opened my eyes to, wow, people that I grew up with and that I've known and are so close to and talk to on a daily basis would just drop you like a bad habit because they just don't know any better, and they're that, you know. It's disheartening. It's horrible. And
it was truly horrible. And Matt started, you know, the process with the judicial system, and the hearings began. And every time there was a hearing, it was canceled. Sometimes in the last hour, right before he was supposed to go to his attorney's office, because it was during COVID,
right?
And everything was done via Zoom. He was lucky in the aspect that he was not sitting in a jail cell, and that even made him feel guilty. He felt bad for the people who were sitting in the DC jail.
Yeah,
and he was home.
I was going to ask. Okay, so he was not detained until his trial. Did he? I mean, he had a lawyer. When they found out, when the indictments came out, or when the charges came out, rather. Did he have to go in and surrender himself with an attorney, or did they come and hunt him down at his house and grab him?
Well, it was quite sneaky what they did. I was still at home. I was home that week. Like I said, I went up, and Matt's dad and I went to go to the store.
Okay.
And the phone rang, and it was Matt, and he said, the FBI agent called me, and they had a few more questions, so they're coming over to the house. And I said to Matt's dad, "Turn the car around right now. Turn it around." And he said, "What are you thinking?" And I said, "Go home now." He said, "But they're a 45-minute drive away from my house." I said, "I got a bad feeling." So we turn the car around, we pull into his driveway, and there are four or five FBI cars parked in the snow, in the grass, and
right.
I mean, everywhere. And we go into the house, and the two FBI officers that were initially the ones that interviewed him were there. And they were still being as kind and respectful as they were that day. I have to honestly say, I don't think these two enjoyed what they were doing that day. I don't.
Okay.
And but the other people that were with him came in like guns a-blazing. And Matt's dad, who has some health issues, was visibly shaken, and he almost fell. He like passed out. And the two FBI agents told the other ones to wait outside. They didn't want to, and they said, "Listen, you wait outside." And they said to my brother, "We are not going to handcuff Matt in front of you. We'll do it in the car." And they said, "We're going to take him in for questioning, and you can come down in 3 hours and pick him up." And they took him out to his house, because he was at his dad's house. They took him to his house, where they took his laptops, any cell phones he had, the clothes he was wearing to January 6th that day. And they looked through his house. They didn't find anything.
And they had a search warrant and everything that day?
I believe they did, yeah. They did. And they didn't find anything. I mean, nothing to incriminate him on anything. And so we were still thinking this could play out okay. You know, they didn't find anything. But every time there was a discovery hearing, they delayed it. They postponed it. Postponed because of discovery. And I kept telling Matt, because they're not discovering anything. They're looking, right, but they're not discovering.
Right.
But it was weighing on him, and he started to decline mentally. He was talking about suicide early on. And I flew home, I don't know how many times that year, just to be there with him and help him get through this. And finally, after several hearings, it was clear that the DOJ was not going to drop any of the charges. They weren't going to plea bargain anything. He had to plead guilty or he was going to trial. That was his choice.
Was he still dealing with this attorney, the same attorney?
Yes, he was. And he kept saying, "Don't worry, I've got this." It was his famous words. And finally, in December of that year, 2021, Matt's attorney told him the fastest way to get this over with and put it behind you would be to plead guilty. So Matt pled guilty, and based on no previous charges, based on the fact that he was considered a caregiver for his dad, his attorney said, "If we can get reports from my brother's doctors, saying his condition, I don't see you spending more than 6 to 12 months in jail, or you may even get 6 to 12 months house arrest based on all of this." So my brother had his doctors write out all these reports about his condition. And whoever the person was, it was a female, and it was something to do with the, not parole, but probation. It was a probation department.
Right.
They had the ability to look at these letters and this evidence and take points off of Matt's initial charges. And she looked at everything and she said to the attorney, "I don't believe he's a caregiver. There's no proof of that whatsoever. So I'm not deducting the points." So he would have still been at a 6 to 12 month sentence. So Matt started to research. I told you he read all the time. He started to research what life was like in a federal prison camp. His attorney told him it would probably be a minimum security prison camp in Virginia or West Virginia, not too far from where his dad lived. And Matt had decided he was going to turn it into a positive. He was going to work on another degree, and he was going to use his knowledge to teach the other prisoners so that they could obtain their GEDs. So that's what he was thinking. I can help other people. I can still help people while I'm there. He was telling me. He actually was like kind of resigned to the fact that this is what it was going to be, and he accepted it, and that was that. And then a week before his hearing, which was supposed to be on March 3rd, either March 3rd or March 5th, it was a week before his hearing, he had a bad feeling, and he called his attorney. He said, "I got a bad feeling about this. That's the same day my mom died." And Alan, I don't believe that was a coincidence. They played head games.
There are no such thing as coincidences, and we've seen that in so many different ways over the past 3 and 4 years, and even before, but people that were paying attention. There's no such thing as coincidences. It's a head game, and they're doing this on purpose to good people because they can, and they're being manipulated and controlled to do that.
Right. So Matt called me after he got done speaking to his attorney, and he was sobbing uncontrollably. He's normally a very articulate speaker. He had developed a stutter in the last weeks of his life it was unexplainable. And I could barely understand him, but he called me sobbing and he said, "Aunt Jerry, this is not looking good. They want to add a terrorism enhancement at my sentencing hearing, and they've postponed my hearing to April Fool's Day."
This is after he had pleaded guilty to the four charges. He was just awaiting sentencing. He wasn't sentenced yet. He was awaiting sentencing.
He was awaiting sentencing, and he was expecting it to be, like I said, 6 to 12 months. And he was sobbing, and I said, "Matt, don't worry. We're going to handle this. Don't worry. I don't think this is going to happen." I said, "Let's have faith." He had a lot of faith. Matt was a Christian. He read his Bible daily. I don't know how many times he read through the book, but if after he died, I saw his Bible and there really wasn't a page in his Bible that didn't have notes written on it. There wasn't. And it was like he was just searching for answers all the time. And so that Friday, that was on a Monday, that Friday, I was getting ready to take a bath. I'd been working in the yard all day and I came in the house to take a bath and my phone rang and it was one of my brothers. And they said, "Jerry, you better book another plane ticket." I said, "What's wrong?" And my brother said, "Matt's dead. He hung himself in his car."
Oh, wow.
I remember that moment, and I will remember it for the rest of my life. I picked up the phone, and I called his attorney. And I said, "Listen, you said you've got..." I said, "Your famous line was, 'I've got this, I've got this, I've got this.'" I said, "You didn't have shit." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Matt is dead. He hanged himself 15 minutes ago." He said, "No, no way. There's no way he did that." I said, "Yes, he did. I told you time and time again, he was suicidal this year. And you just kept saying that he wasn't going to go to jail or he was only going to be 6 to 12 months. And then he said, "Don't you pin this on me." And then he said, "I'm hanging up on you because you're irrational."
That's what the attorney said to you.
Yeah, he hung up on me.
The attorney was a piece of garbage from the start, it sounded like. I'm sure he was paid handsomely or whatever the agreement was with him. And you knew right off the bat when you pulled up in front of his office and Matthew wanted to give him a chance. He didn't work hard on this case because, I'm sorry, I know a lot of attorneys too, Jerry. And I just find it very hard to believe that an attorney could not somehow get either one or more of those four charges either thrown out or reduced dramatically and drastically. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they want to add a terrorism enhancement. Did they ever say base? Did it ever come out? It seems like it happened really fast. On what basis did they want to add this terrorism enhancement?
Well, when he said in the video, "This isn't over yet," they took that as a threat.
Oh my God.
But what Matt was referring to was the votes of the Dominion systems are going to be audited and the truth is going to come out. He had hope and faith that that's what was going to happen. And then on one of his January 6th posts, he had put an American flag emoji and a firecracker and a little bomb. And the bomb emoji was being used against him as a terroristic tool. So he put this bomb on there. And if you're going to a birthday party and you put a bomb, you know, this party's going to be the bomb, you know? Is that a terrorism enhancement necessary there too? I mean, are you a terrorist because you use that emoji?
I don't know. If you use an
angry emoji and you're angry, if you use that, are you violent?
I don't know. I'm going to ask that question on Twitter tonight, and I'm going to make sure I put two American flags and two bombs next to it and say, is this a terroristic threat? Is the FBI going to come to my house?
It was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. And then, you know, I had to fly home the next day. I was just a basket case. I was on the plane writing my nephew's obituary in my seat. And we had the funeral. The same newspaper that was so cruel to him refused to put the entire obituary in the newspaper. They took two lines out of my obituary. It said, they took the line out where Matt was ushered into the Capitol by Capitol Police. And I put another line in there that said, many people are responsible for his death. And they said I had no proof of either, so they would not let me have that in the obituary.
That is amazing.
They were editing the only truthful article that was written about my nephew. And that's why I wrote the obituary the way I did. It was a very long obituary. It cost over $600 to put in. But it was the only truthful article written about him. And we had his funeral. We had over 100 flower arrangements. Most of them were from people around the country that had never met him. His guest book online was the largest guest book ever for that funeral home. Over 1,000 entries in it. But they had to start monitoring it because people started sending the absolute worst messages.
Of course.
Evil messages.
Of course.
We had his funeral and we met person after person. Many had traveled from as far away as Florida, New Jersey, Chicago, had never met Matt. They just wanted to come and support him. And one of the things that they did at his funeral was an honor guard had reached out to the funeral director and asked if they could come and stand guard over the casket. Matt was not in the military ever. They came and they stood guard and they did a flag folding ceremony right at the funeral. And they handed the flag to my brother. And my brother was just kind of confused. He said, I am really confused by all of this. He said, Matt wasn't in the military. And they said, Matthew was more patriotic than most every veteran they had ever done a funeral for. And if they could have done a 21-gun salute, they would have.
And he was victimized by his federal government. He was persecuted by his federal government, all for nonsense political theater.
Yes.
And I know there have been some since. I believe he was the first one I heard about it. I remember hearing about it right when it happened. I think it might have been even after the funeral, because I remember on one of my shows, I brought it up and was talking about it. Mm-hmm. I have to go back and look. It was basically around when it happened, but I did an episode and part of it was about, you know, what the DOJ is doing, causing people to take their own lives. And then, you know, here we are. I'm speaking with you. I feel like I know the guy, the way you've spoken about him, because he reminds me a lot of ways about myself. And there's no question on the patriotism he had and the love he had for his country. And then I say this because a lot of people get this confused, and I talk about it a lot. You know, you can love your country and love your flag and completely have despise and have disdain for your government because they are not the same and they don't run hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And I can just hearing Matt's story, I can say, you know, he didn't trust his government. He wants, just like we all want to trust our government, but we can't. Just like talking to the FBI, thinking he's going to clear his name. We want to, But we know deep down that we can't, but we love our country. And it's hard because sometimes they bleed into each other. Like, well, I love my country, so I'm going to talk to these guys because I know I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
And look what that got him. But, you know, in my eyes, he's right. He's a great American patriot. He stood for something, and he was the textbook political persecution, which this should not even be happening now. Ever in this country, this political persecution and the weaponization of our government against its own people. And it's wild. I mean, what are your thoughts on like the what's happening now in our government in reference to January 6th? Like
Well, the 40,000 plus hours of videotape that they've released to Tucker, I have mixed feelings about that. I don't know how Tucker is going to be able to condense 40,000 plus hours into a show or a week of shows for that matter.
He didn't have access. They didn't give it to him. His producers had to go to the Capitol and look at it, I think, on one terminal. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they were able to take copies of it. I think they would just be able to take notes on based on what they were seeing. Like, I don't know if any of us will ever get a chance to see any of that. And I am. Right. What's that?
I think it should have been released on the internet.
100%.
For everybody to watch.
It should have been that's the people's house. We pay for that. We pay for those cameras. That footage belongs to the American people.
It should be for everybody's eyes.
Yep. You should be able to go to congress.gov and click a link or a separate website and be able to watch every single video from every single camera.
I agree.
From January 6th. I do like, and I didn't look into it enough, but I did hear some buzz that I believe Kevin McCarthy was going to release it to January 6th defense attorneys. I don't know for sure. There was an attorney that tweeted about it. I forget his name. He's one of the big prominent January 6th attorneys out there. Forget his name. Thought I saw something on Twitter that looked like that they were going to release that footage. Kevin McCarthy was going to make sure, I think, that footage was released to January 6th defendant. I don't know.
But you know what, Ellen? Exactly what does that do for everybody who's already been tried and convicted?
And that brings
for my nephew, Matthew.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Are they going to overturn those sentences? I doubt it.
Well,
are they going to restore those people's marriages and their families? Are they going to get them their jobs back? Are they going to get their pensions back together?
No.
It's not going to do a damn thing.
No. And I mean, so we could take it one step further and still, it's still limited because the damage is done, but I guess it's principle. You know, let's say we're going into, and it's so long away, we're going into 2 years. And if by luck, I'm still a big supporter, Donald Trump gets the nomination and he pulls through a general election without them rigging and stealing it again. I know he's mentioned it. Will he do blanket pardons or look and make sure that the people that didn't actually, because we know, and I talk about this with Cynthia Hughes on numerous occasions from the Patriot Freedom Project, there are some people that did some things that they need to answer for. There was some violence. We know that. We know that every single person there wasn't a Boy Scout. But if Donald Trump becomes president, will he issue pardons? And again, you could turn around and say, well, what would that do? Well, I guess it'll get rid of convictions and people could be released if they're still in jail and things like that. There's a lot of what ifs, and it's just, it all sucks so bad.
It does. And you know what? Google lives forever. So even if you received a pardon and you're applying for a job, they're going to Google you.
They're going to Google you. And
it's going to follow you for the rest of your life.
100%.
And I don't think, you know, you mentioned Patriot Freedom Project, who they are doing astounding things to help the families of the J6ers. They've extended their reach to not just providing attorney fees, but helping with rent and food and all those necessities that many of these people, maybe they were a one-income family. Maybe they were a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
But the point is, this is not just affecting the J6er who was arrested. This is affecting their entire family. This is affecting their children who are being bullied in school. and embarrassed, and it's breaking families apart. And for some of them, it's putting them out on the street. I know of a couple that had their lease canceled because of their spouse's affiliation with January 6th. I don't know where it's going to end, honestly. And if Donald Trump gets elected and he gives pardons, that's wonderful. And I want one for Matthew. I want a pardon for my nephew. Even though Absolutely. It doesn't make sense to anybody else, it makes sense to me.
Absolutely.
But I want him to give those pardons, but I want him to be selective at the same time, because some of those people are the reason that the innocent people are suffering.
Yeah.
Those people that hurt people and broke things and broke laws, they are the reason the others are paying for it. And I don't have any pity on them. I don't.
Well, I know we're far off from presidential election, and I hope Donald Trump gets elected, and I hope things like that happen, and Matt gets a pardon, and there are selective pardons given out to people that actually deserve it. And I'm hoping that we get down to the bottom of things, just so more of the public sees what really went on and the exposing of all this nefarious nonsense from our government, from Nancy Pelosi down to the Capitol Police and the FBI and everything else. And that's all we can hope for. I wanted to direct people to learn more about Matt. And I know we have the website. I just brought it up here. It's rememberingmattperna.com. And here, like you said, they can go and they could see, you know, read about Matt's story and what he's done and the media that you have done. And I see something up there, the Matthew Perna bill, and you're doing something in D.C. Probably, hopefully. I know it got postponed soon. I know Matt Gaetz is having a hearing and is going to have you there. What do you think now that the Republicans have the House, and right now it's just a lot of real committees, not a lot going on. Do you think that these House Republicans are going to be able to get down to the root and expose what really went on, or at least get close to exposing a lot of what really went on that day?
I don't know. I don't know how many of them will. I just know that when Matt was going through his 13-month nightmare, not a one of them returned an email or a phone call. And I know for a fact that many of the other J6ers who have reached out to their congresspeople for help, it has fallen on deaf ears. I am pushing the Matthew Perna Act of 2022, which Louie Gohmert drafted prior to his term ending and Marjorie Taylor Greene co-sponsored. I'm going to be pushing that hard, because you could read the details of the bill on my website, but it would make it illegal for them to, I would also make sure that they could have a change of venue, so that maybe if they did want to take their case to trial, they would feel that they were going to have a fair shake at it outside of D.C.
Yeah, nobody's getting a fair trial as a conservative in D.C. Nobody ever has. Nobody ever will. Look what they've done to people, even big name people. And they will do that to every January 6th and keep going. For anything that has to do with a conservative, your juries are going to be filled with former Obama staffers and liberals of D.C., and donors of Democrat politicians who despise anything conservative, anything Republican, and especially anything that has to do with making America great again, MAGA people, and everything else.
Well, and many of the, majority of the Republicans refuse to even talk about January 6th.
Right.
Because if they show any sign of sympathy towards the J6ers, they feel they're going to lose support. They're going to lose votes. They're going to lose donations. So they stayed silent on it. Well, this silence.
They need to lose votes and they need to lose donations for staying silent on it.
Exactly. Because I'm sorry, but they all have blood on their hands as far as I'm concerned. Their silence. And you know, some of them, like Senator Ted Cruz, it was in January prior to Matt killing himself that Senator Cruz called the J6ers terrorists. And then he tried to backtrack that.
Yes.
And Tucker Carlson had him on the show, and he was like, you said it. It's right here. You can't, it wasn't taken out of context. You said it. So What do you say about that? I mean, who are they kidding?
There's a lot of people that really slipped up and really, I guess maybe they really spoke their truth or what they really meant when they talked bad and harshly about January 6th. Ted Cruz did it. Yeah. Ron DeSantis Ron DeSantis said some things I didn't like about when he was talking about January 6th and others, but.
Well, let me tell you, as far as Ron DeSantis being the governor of Florida, he's done a phenomenal job. I voted for him both times. I would vote for him again as governor.
Absolutely.
But I do know personally J6ers who have reached out to Ron DeSantis, because you have to understand the desperation that they have reached. They'll reach out to anybody that they think could possibly help them.
Of course.
They've reached out to Ron DeSantis and it has fallen on deaf ears every single time. He won't return a phone call or an email.
It's not surprising. And I'll tell you what, if he does decide to pull the trigger and run for president, I'm hoping that those people will come forward loud and proud about those calls to their governor, their Republican.
I was told by a Republican congressman person, very, very well-known person, he said, if Ron DeSantis gets in, not one pardon will be issued.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I could tell you this. Ron DeSantis will not be the nominee, so we don't have to worry about that. No. The more people that run for president are going to take away primary votes from Ron DeSantis, and it'll be like 2016. Donald Trump will kick his ass on the debate stage. Mm-hmm. Already, he was trailing in the polls with Donald Trump, and then with Nikki Haley, for her name in the ring, she didn't take any polling away from Donald Trump, but she did take away from Ron DeSantis, and that right. was happening. So I like Ron DeSantis. I think he needs to stay in Florida, and I say this publicly, where he should come out and endorse Donald Trump, and then when Donald Trump becomes the next president of the United States, maybe there's a spot for him in the administration for Ron DeSantis, and maybe then he can grow a little bit and maybe run for president in 2028. But as of right now, I'm not even confident I want to see him in the White House ever.
No, I'm not either. And that was one of the things Matt had said about Donald Trump when he ran. He wasn't a politician. He was already wealthy. The man has more money than he will ever be able to spend, or his children will ever be able to spend, or his grandkids. He doesn't need the money. No. And that's why they hated him so much, because they knew he couldn't be bought. Well, anybody outside of that economic status that Donald Trump is in can be bought and will be bought.
100%. Listen, Jerry, I have to have you back, especially when, you attend these congressional hearings and other updates. I know you got your finger on the pulse of what's going on January 6th between you, Cynthia Hughes, and others out there. But where can people follow you to just, see what you're doing and updates on various things?
Well, you can definitely, visit our website and sign up on the contact page. And we send out emails, not crazy, like not all the time, but we send out emails with updates. I am on Twitter under Jerry Perna. I'm on Facebook, but I really don't like Facebook.
Yeah.
And I'm not a snob, but I'm not going to accept the friend requests on Facebook. I keep my circle small. But I am on Twitter, and I'm on True Social as well.
And the website is rememberingmattperna.com. You can go there and you can see all. You've been on with Sebastian Gorka, Dinesh D'Souza, Tucker Carlson, so many others. Obviously, none of them compare to my show, The Great Divide Podcast. Sorry, boys, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Actually, Dinesh D'Souza he's been on my show. He's a great guy.
He's a sweetheart.
He really is. Really is great. And he's done some amazing things for the Patriot Freedom Project and everything else. So, Jerry, listen, I can't even tell you. There aren't even words to thank you for sharing the story about Matt. I mean, it's amazing. And it really takes a lot to move me. People call me, I'm very sarcastic, have a dark humor and a heart of stone, but this one really, you got me, Jerry, you got me. And my co-host will be breaking my chops when I tell him, but it's, Matt Perna, I feel like I know him, and he was just an you could just know, you know, by hearing about him and the reading I've done about him, amazing, amazing American. And it's a sin and it's criminal what this country drove him to do.
It is criminal. And I'm ashamed of this country right now.
Yeah, I'm right there with you right now. But again, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. And I hope that you'll come back soon and we'll share some other things.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Alan.
Oh, it's my pleasure. All right, everybody, listen, go and get all the episodes. Go follow on Rumble, 1776live.tv. Make sure you're following Jerry Perna on Twitter. Just look her up, Jerry Perna. You can find her on my Twitter page, too. I'm going to link some stuff. I'm Alan Jacoby, 1776 on Twitter. I'm on Truth Social and all that. And I will be back tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And then we have Freedom Friday with James at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. So we'll see you all soon. Have a good one.